Humanity in healthcare is seeing and being seen, and hearing and being heard, and healing and being healed.
More human healthcare means I know what matters to my patients, not just what's the matter with them.
And more human healthcare means extending kindness, compassion and fair treatment, regardless of my faith, nationality and race. Remembering that underneath it all, we're all human.
More human healthcare means remembering everyone involved is human.
As staff, it would mean the umbrella of safety and compassion is extended to me. As a patient, it would mean not to be unfavorably cared for because of who I am.
More human healthcare means a warm and listening face, an attitude of respect, and an honest and open response.
Humanized healthcare for me is more than just dressing my wounds. It's holding my hand, looking into my eyes, asking how I feel. It's checking that I'm not scared, treating me like a human being.
Making healthcare more human, both for people working to deliver care and for the people they care for, is the mission of the Point of Care Foundation. To do that, in our winter series, we want to share some of the reality of being in the front line of healthcare from different perspectives across NHS, social care and the third sector. These voices from the point of care are an important counterbalance to some of the rhetoric that's flying around the press, with healthcare staff represented as heroes and sometimes villains, when in reality we're all just humans who have good and bad days. We think it's important to share some of the joy of work in health and care, the bits that get you up in the morning, whether they're the colleagues, the moving tributes, or simply the patients and the impact that we have on all their lives. But it's also important to understand some of the realities of working in healthcare, and the toll it takes, as well as the great bits that get you up in the morning. So I'm joined today by Kynwynn Giles, who's the Director of Partnerships and Evaluation at Shine Cancer Support. Kynwynn's worked in the charity sector, both in the UK and internationally, and has worked in the field of international development. Kynwynn was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin lymphoma 6 weeks after her daughter was born prematurely, and it was this experience that developed her interest in patient involvement in the UK's healthcare system. In addition to her work with Shine, Kynwynn is also a trustee for the Point of Care Foundation and a member of the General Advisory Council of the King's Fund. So you're very welcome. It's lovely to be with you today, Kynwynn. I usually include in my introduction something from people's Twitter profile as well. And controversially, I noticed that you're a hater of soup and food on sticks, which is pretty controversial.
It really is true. Yeah.
So you're very, very welcome. I'd like to hear a little bit more about your role at Shine and what's a typical day or week like, if there is such a thing at the moment.
Thanks, Belle. So Shine is a national charity. We provide support and information to people in their 20s, 30s and 40s diagnosed with cancer. And that's any type of cancer at any stage. So we're kind of, you know, most cancer charities or a lot of cancer charities sort of focus on one specific type of cancer. We focus on all of them because we want to support people through what we think is a particularly difficult kind of life stage, you know, where you're working, you might be trying to have a family, a young family. You might be concerned about fertility. And also you probably have cancer is more disruptive, I think, in a lot of ways to your life plans when you're younger than when you're older. Because if you're 70, nobody wants to get cancer ever. But if you're 70, you know, you've had a long time to live and you've probably had your career, whereas someone who's 30 is right in the middle of trying to build one. So that's what I do. Gosh, a typical week is really, it's a bit hard to say right now. We gave up our office in London, April 2020, I think. So we don't have an office. We've all been working from home pretty much since then. And I am immunocompromised, so that's made it really tricky to kind of get out and about. We used to travel a lot. We were running workshops in hospitals. We were running retreats, running conferences in person. So all of that's moved online at the moment. So I spend a lot of time in front of my computer, but it's a real mix of kind of talking to the people that we work with to manage our programs, sometimes delivering the programs myself as well, which is always really, it's great. And then just at the moment, we're doing a strategic planning process. So that's interesting.
And so what's it like to be a sort of leader in your organisation at the moment? How have things changed? Because I guess a lot of the people that you work with at Shine have the same sort of health challenges that you mentioned yourself.
Yeah, they do. I mean, we're a small team. There's four of us who are employees at the moment, and then we work with consultants as well. And I think it's really tricky. I mean, I think we always worked from home or quite flexibly even before the pandemic. So in that sense, it wasn't maybe such a big transition as it would have been for an organization that had never done that. But I think what's really getting difficult now is starting to think, okay, we're December 2021. It's going to have been 2 years since we worked together in person. And actually, that's crazy. I don't know where the time's gone. And I think you do get a lot of energy from working with people and even our beneficiaries. You know, we used to run retreats, which I loved running. And you get a lot of energy from that because you see the benefit directly, the changes it's brought to people. And I think that's quite difficult. I think we've had a lot of success with our programs online, but it is difficult for the people we support because they don't get to see each other and get to meet each other in a different, in the same way as they used to. But also for us, you don't get that same kind of energy and feedback. So that's a bit tough. However, obviously quite a few of the people that we do work with are immunocompromised. And so actually working from home is the only option we've had. And I suppose we're lucky that the technology allows us to do that because I don't know what if this was the 1980s, I don't know what we would have done. We'd all be out of jobs.
That's for sure, yeah. And what about looking after people and taking care of people and taking care of yourselves? Because, you know, I don't know about you, but I found this working from home for now getting on for 2 years quite hard, actually. The sense of isolation from people is really tough. I'm guessing that must be the same for you.
Yeah, and I think also that kind of recognition, which you have to recognize that the pandemic has introduced a level of stress into everyone's lives, right? So we're constantly living with that stress. I think for the people we support or work with who are immune compromised, their level of stress is certainly higher. I know mine is. And so actually living with that constant threat and then having to pick yourself up every day and think, no, but I've got to go and do this job where you have to support people. That's not always easy, actually. And I've certainly had days where I thought, God, you know, I don't know how much left I have to give to other people because my cup is running pretty low. And I think that's really tough. But I mean, I know I'm not alone in that. But I sometimes think, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, we try to kind of be really flexible in our approach at work. And because we are all working from home, if someone needs to take a break or a nap or go for a walk, we do that. And it's just been really up and down. We've had people have COVID, have the flu, people, you know, someone today isn't feeling well because they had their booster jab. So it kind of feels like there's always something at the moment.
And how do you keep the support going for your beneficiaries? How's that working?
So I think we're probably lucky in that because we work with younger people in, you know, 20s, 30s, and even 40s, a lot of them were digitally fluent anyway. So running things via Zoom or WhatsApp, that was familiar to people. And what we've tried to do with our programs is take the content of our in-person programs and put them online. Obviously, that had to be different because the stuff we would jam into a 3.5 day retreat, no one wants to do 3.5 days online, right? So we've kind of broken things up and really actually pared back on the content of a lot of stuff just to give people a chance to talk, because it is harder to connect online because you can't just kind of break off from a group and go have a coffee, right? You're online, everyone's in their little boxes and only one person can talk at once. So we do a lot of breakout rooms. We do one-to-one conversations. We have WhatsApp groups for our program so that people have a bunch of different ways that they can connect with one another. And I think to a large extent, that's worked. Like, you know, people have made really good friendships. And actually what's been really nice is a few times people who have been on our programs didn't know each other beforehand. And then they've sent us a photo from 3 months later when somehow they managed to meet up. One person went to the other person's town and they went for a coffee. And it's like, look, I've met this person in real life. So that was the bulk of our work, I think, early on, really figuring out how do we shift this in-person support to something that's online. We have other stuff like Facebook groups and Twitter and social media. But yeah, I think next year we do really want to try to get back to doing more in-person stuff, because there is some of that that you just can't replicate online as much as you'd love to.
Yeah, same here. I know it's been really difficult, hasn't it? I mean, we're trying to approach this podcast series with a bit more of an upbeat sort of tone about, you know, some of the great things about the sorts of jobs that both you and I have, you know, and people in the NHS, because there's such a lot of doom and gloom around, isn't there? So what would you say are the best things about your role at Shine?
I think the best thing about my role at Shine is really just, well, it's the people. One, the people that I get to work with, because we're actually pretty clear at Shine that we only like to work with nice people. So you can be completely different to us. That's totally fine. But we mainly want to work with nice people. Everyone who works for us at the moment actually had a previous career before they had cancer. So we're patient led. So everyone, I think, individually has gone through a big change and come to a place where they've come into this work because they do want to make a difference in some way. And you want to have a nice time because actually, you know, life is short. And I think we're all really aware of that. And so I guess that leads on to actually just the people that we work with. You know, we work with amazing people, the people that we support. I mean, they support us as well. And, you know, I'm always really interested to hear people's stories and just learn how they live their lives, because you can learn a lot just from chatting to people. So I feel really privileged, actually, that we're in a position that we're constantly getting to meet new, interesting people and hear about their lives. And I think that's the best part. And I assume, you know, if you're a nurse or a doctor or a porter in a hospital or in a trust somewhere else, it's the same thing. You're always meeting new people. And actually, if you can keep in mind that most people are just doing the best they can and they have interesting stories, then I think there is a lot of joy in that.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that's very much what I feel. I sometimes can't believe I'm getting paid to chat to people and find out their story. You think, this can't be right. This can't be a job, you know.
Yeah.
So what's hard? What's hard about your job? What are the difficult things, the challenges?
Obviously, we're dealing with really serious illness and people die. And that's really hard. And as we've grown, you know, we are still quite small, but as we've grown and supported more people, unfortunately, I still don't think it happens as often as people would think it does running a cancer charity, but we do have people pass away and people that I really like and people I've become friends with. And that's really hard. And it's really hard when you see people who, you know, they're good people, and cancer strips away a lot of the power and the joy in their lives. And that's really tough. That is the thing that I hate the most and I struggle the most with. And I think probably having been ill myself, there is a kind of empathy for that position as well, knowing what that feels like. And obviously I was lucky to recover, but it's, yeah, I think that hits you in a different way when you've been there yourself. I think that's hard. I think the other thing that's just hard at the moment is, like we were talking about, you know, supporting yourself and supporting your team when you know everyone's just got this massive background of stress. We're talking right now, Omicron's taking off and like it's, you know, it's all in the press and no one kind of knows what to do. And so that constant balance of uncertainty is really difficult.
Must be incredibly difficult. I mean, it puts me in mind of a lot of the work that we do at the Point of Care Foundation and supporting staff and how, you know, how faced with people's experiences every day is, it's such an emotional, emotionally challenged, very enriching in some ways, but actually very, I can't think of the right word, but it, you know, as you say, you know, you're sometimes your cup is empty, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think I've seen that more in myself and my team over the last, let's say, year. I think you can do anything. You know, the first year it was all new in a way, wasn't it? But and we were learning new ways of doing things. I feel like 2021 has really dragged, and people are at their resilience is lower. And that's for the people we support as well. You know, they're having a tough time because actually having cancer in a pandemic is just really hard.
Yeah. And also services are just not able to provide the speed of access to treatment and care in the same way as, you know, normally. I think that must be such a worry.
And I think the way that you connect, that patients are able to connect with their medical team is really different as well. You don't have appointments in the same way. You maybe don't have as long, or you have to fight harder to get them and stuff. You know, I had one person said to me a little while ago, it's really stuck with me. She stuck with me. She said, I've been in treatment for a year and I have never seen the face of anyone who has been treating me. Right. So she's gone through cancer treatment. She's had bits of her body cut out. She's never seen anyone's face. And that sounds like, on the one hand, well, okay, everyone has to wear a mask, that's just what you do. But actually, you learn a lot about people if you can take your mask down. And she did actually see the face of one person. Somebody took her out to a garden, a hospital garden, and she said, yeah, they took their mask off and they didn't look at all like I imagined they would. So I feel like we've developed these relationships with people. We don't even know what they look like.
No, it's like some sort of dystopian novel, isn't it? It's extraordinary, yeah, what we've become accustomed to.
Absolutely.
So I've got a couple more things I wanted to ask you, Kaimwyn, and I'll be really, really interested to know what your responses to these are. The media has really it's characterised people in healthcare as either, you know, heroes or villains. One minute we're all clapping outside on our doorsteps, and the next minute GPs don't want to see people face to face and all of that. So what would you, if you could influence the general public in relation to the NHS just now, what would you want them to know?
As I felt, my worry was everyone's going to come out and clap and then they're going to forget about it. And I feel that's a bit what happened, right? Like people took the NHS a bit for granted before the start of the pandemic, then we all rallied around and then everyone went, oh, I can't get a GP appointment. And they got really angry. And it's that, it's like you said, that you're either a hero or a villain. And actually it's a lot of people working really hard, doing the best they can. And they're understaffed and they're under-resourced. So I guess I would like the general public to know that, you know, most people in healthcare are really doing the best they can. And they went into the job because they wanted to help people. And you hear horrible stories of abuse and people, you know, treating hospital staff badly or screaming at GPs, receptionists, and you think, but, you know, they have to go into work every day and face this onslaught, and that's not helpful. However, if I was talking to policymakers and the media, I might also say that I think these polarized views are not helpful. I mean, you know, having a campaign that GPs need to see everybody in person is ridiculous because not everyone needs to see a GP in person all the time. And I think we have to stop these kind of absolute positions. And actually, if the healthcare system was more patient focused, they would be able to see a bit more nuance, right? As I'm a patient myself, sometimes I need to see my GP in person, but actually, quite a few times probably, I'd be very happy to have a phone call or a video call because I don't need to take 2 hours to go in and wait. So I would like to see a bit more nuance in the way that we think of the NHS, nuance in the policies that we develop, and nuance, I guess, in our approach to using services as well.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of preempted my last question, really, which is, If you were stuck in a lift with the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care.
Oh, no. Okay. Me and Saj hang out.
What message would you want him to unequivocally receive from Kynwynn?
Well, at the moment, given the situation, I think the thing that is most on my mind actually is I feel there has been a complete failure to support clinically vulnerable people through the last, I would say, 6 months of the pandemic. And I would want Sajid Javid and the people around him to understand that just saying it's Freedom Day and everyone can, there's no restrictions, left a lot of people, myself included, but a lot of people, hundreds of thousands of people, out on a limb without any protection. And I think they need to up their game. They need to actually think about all of these vulnerable people who are not wastrels, and they're not old people who have dementia who are sitting in care homes. They're people like me who want to work and contribute to society and have something to offer. And I think we saw that with the disaster that was the rollout of the third jabs. And now everyone's getting boosters, and that's great. But actually, my worry is there's no support for people who should be shielding, who, if they get sick, will get very ill. And a lot of those people are being forced to work or have no choice but to work because they need the money outside of their home in a very difficult situation. And that is the thing I would like them to really consider, because I actually think the way we treat the most vulnerable in society says a lot about us. And I think we've done a pretty terrible job the last 6 months.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
We're not going to end on a high, Bev, but it makes me pretty angry.
No, I think that's a really important message that needs to be heard, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, no, I think that's a really strong message. I don't think he'd be under any illusions about where you were coming from on that.
No, and I would. I mean, you know, obviously I would be polite, because I'm sure in some ways he must trying his best as well, as we all are, but I think there's room to do better.
Brilliant. for sure. Thanks so much, Kynwynn. That's been a really, really great conversation. I'm really grateful for you spending your time with me and sharing your thoughts. If you want to find out more about the Point of Care Foundation and our mission to humanise healthcare, or indeed want to find out more about Shine Cancer Support, do get in touch with us. The Point of Care Foundation website is pointofcarefoundation.org.uk, or we're at Point of Care Foundation on Twitter. Kynwynn, I don't know whether you want to plug for Shine while we're at it.
Our website is shinecancersupport.org. We are on Facebook, we are on Twitter, we are on Instagram. And so you can find us any way you like, and you can just Google Shine Cancer Support and we will be there.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time today. And thank you for listening to Point of Care Foundation podcast. I hope you like what you heard, and we'll look out for our next episode on humanising health and care. Until then, this is me, Beth Fitzsimons, saying goodbye.